better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 73 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this is kind of our episode that we are recording because we haven't really actually talked, like, Mets stuff in a while beyond, like, sexual harassment. So let's, like, not. That this week finally talk about sexual harassment for once and actually talk about baseball because that's a refreshing change. Spring training is right around the corner. Literally, pitchers and catchers, at least for the Mets, report tomorrow, I believe.
Yes.
I think the Mets are the last team to report for some reason, but they all reported like this week. It's just the Mets happen to be on Wednesday instead of like Tuesday or Monday, which is odd. But
I always like the Valentine's Day pitchers and catchers. I kind of feel like that's very like timely and it's all about love and warm feelings. And I don't know, I might be the only person who likes to celebrate Valentine's Day with pitchers and catchers, but it just feels right.
Yeah, no,
it's tomorrow's my dad's birthday, so it feels more fitting to me, since he's the one who made me a Met fan, so
there you go.
That's kind of my take on it.
My dad's birthday is March 28th, so it's always like opening day always corresponds with my dad's birthday, more or less. Not this year, but it's usually right around, if not that day, then like within a couple of days of that. So that's always fun. But yeah, so we haven't actually talked about the Mets roster, looking at a bird's eye view of it in a while. We had a pod right in the aftermath of the Lindor Carrasco trade. So we talked about that and all of the happiness involved with that and Francisco Lindor is a Met, which is amazing. But we, you know, the Mets have done and notably not done a lot of things since that trade that should be discussed on the podcast. They traded Steven Matz, which we never actually really talked about on this show. They traded Steven Matz for three prospects, all of which are like the idea of trading Steven Matz, other than the fact that he's, you know, been not effective for a little while now, is, you know, the Mets are very inflexible in their roster, I guess you could say, in the fact that they don't have too many optionable arms. So I think the idea behind the Steven Matz trade was to turn Steven Matz, a kind of fringe starting pitcher swing man at this point in his career, into dudes who are like that but have options and have team control for longer. So they did that. They got sort of three guys kind of like that, but then they turned around and traded one of them, plus a player to be named later who I don't think we know the identity of yet, in a three-team trade that netted them Royals center field prospect Khalil Lee, who is now the like fifth or sixth best prospect, I guess, depending on who you ask. I am not an expert in these matters. From Complex to Queens probably has you covered there. Yeah, their fifth or sixth best prospect or thereabouts. I mean, it's a good thing for the Mets because they have really no outfield depth to speak of, and you know, he potentially can man center field or one of the outfield spots in the future.
So. Are you sure about that, Allison? Because it seems like they want the whole team made out of fourth outfielder.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's another thing we can get to. But as far as like, you know, in the minor league system, they really didn't. It's basically why Tim Tebow makes the spring training roster every year and did again this year.
Florida loves its Tim Tebow, man. Those games will sell out. Are they selling tickets to spring training games? I don't want to know.
They are. Yeah, I don't know if it's full capacity or not. That I don't know. But I know.
I mean, Florida is a break in there to see Tim Tebow, so probably best to just charge them for it.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, but meanwhile, other than Khalil Lee, they seem to want to, their off-season philosophy ever since the Lindor-Carrasco trade, or it depends on what demarcation you want to use. If you want to use the Lindor-Carrasco trade demarcation, or GameStop demarcation, or Jared Porter departure demarcation, like, ever since then, it's kind of been, great, you've built a lot of depth, but you don't have dudes to actually start. Like, you've done a great job with the depth, but you've built the entire team out of depth now.
See, my whole thing is they went into the offseason with very specific needs, like a center fielder, pitching, catcher, and they still have those same needs. Like, they got McCann, but they have no catching depth behind Nito. They got rid of Ally Sanchez, which, okay, it's Ally Sanchez, but if Nito gets hurt, what do you do? Who's your backup?
Pat Mazzucca, come on down. Still on the 40 man somehow.
So they still don't have a center fielder. Their pitching's fine, but with Lugo getting hurt, now you still have, you need bullpen help. So it's like they went and got the best player out there, and that's fantastic. And, you know, they got Carrasco too, which is fantastic. Stroman came back, great. But you still have holes, and it seems like they're back to the same old Mets of, we tried. Like, oh well, we didn't want to give Paxton an extra $3 million. Oops.
Well, I sort of feel like they didn't have a regular Mets offseason, but they had like a regular other team offseason, and sort of like a little like, whoa, this is what like a regular offseason looks like for a team that goes out and like spends some amount of money and does some creative moves and builds depth. And we're used to the Mets going out and doing like nothing or making one like really bizarre move. And we were sort of expecting like drunken sailor offseason. And instead we just got regular offseason. We're like, what is this? What do you call this thing? And they're like, no, that's a regular offseason. Like, oh, I've never seen one of those before.
Yeah. It's interesting because they've made a bunch of signings that, like, each of them on their own, although I do think that Kevin Pillar, in the context of Albert Almora already being here, is sort of weird. But, like, each of them on their own, I'm kind of like, yeah, all right. But, like, they just keep doing stuff like that. It's like, because they basically, to, like, break it down, give you a list, they signed Aaron Loop. I'm not sure which pronunciation.
I think it's Loop.
They signed Aaron Loop to a one-year deal, who's basically the Justin Wilson replacement. Justin Wilson signed with the Yankees like the other day for not that much money at all, and the Mets could have also signed him but opted not to. So they signed Aaron Loop, who's basically the same thing, maybe a little worse, to a one-year deal. They signed Jonathan Villar to a one-year deal, which I really like because he's kind of your utility infielder. He can play all the infield positions plus center field, so that's good. They signed Albert Almora to a one-year deal, and at that point it was like, the Mets have found their center fielder, and I was like, fine, but after, you know, George Springer, that's a little underwhelming. And then they went and signed Kevin Pillar as well. So it's unclear to me. I mean, obviously this means that Guillermo Heredia is toast, which is good to push dudes like that off the roster, but it's unclear to me whether their intention is to, because Almora has an option and Kevin Pillar does not. So it's unclear to me whether their intent is to roster Pillar and stash Almora in AAA, or if their intent is to roster them both at the same time. They're not a platoon, because they're both same-handed, or one of them is a switch hitter, I forget. But they're not opposite-handed from each other. So they're not a platoon battery or anything like that. So it's just, it's kind of weird, and I'm kind of like, I don't know exactly what your plan is with these center fielders, but sure, I mean, fine. They seem unwilling to meet Jackie Bradley Jr.'s price, because he's asking for like a 4-year contract at age 31, and he's a Scott Boras client.
He also
client.
Doesn't make as much sense for them if they can't, if they don't have a DH spot. Like if they're DHing, then they sort of, if there's no DH, then they kind of have to get a little more offense out of their outfield. I mean, I think you can argue it either way, but I get the vibe that that's sort of their feeling, that they can't go defense first in the outfield.
And he's left-handed, so yeah. who's he platooning with?
Right. So I think it's always just going to be about who is spelling Dom Smith or, you know, replacing him late in games. You know, I was really pulling for Bradley, but I get that, like, they just felt like they needed to construct the roster a little bit differently. And from that perspective, I kind of see it. Like, if you're committing to getting the offense out of the outfield, then no, Bradley's not going to be a fit at, you know, I mean, look, he's not getting 4 years, but like 2 years or 3 years or whatever that is, it's just not, like, doesn't align well.
Yeah. And I just think the big whiff of this offseason, really, like, and honestly, if they address in some fashion, and it doesn't have to be in a flashy way, Paxton would have been great. But like, but there are other options still out there, although they are dwindling, that fill their remaining needs. They need one more starting pitcher that's not just minor league depth. They did a really good job of building their minor league, like, back end depth between the Lucchesi trade and Jordan Yamamoto and Mike Montgomery, Tommy Hunter, Jared Eichhoff. They did a bunch of those type of signings. I fully support that. They obviously have had terrible high minors depth on the pitching side in the past, so improving that, all for that. But they still don't really have a guy that can really compete for that fifth starter role. I mean, right now it's Lucchesi's to lose, more or less. I would feel a lot better if they signed Odorizzi or Taiwan Walker. That would be really good, as long as they do that. And one other reliever, especially in light of Seth Lugo's injury, then I would feel pretty good about this offseason. But I think that the only thing that's keeping it from being A+ to me, as long as they do those other two things, the only thing that's keeping it from being A+ to me is the fact that they whiffed on Springer, and I think they're going to regret that. And I think that the reason they whiffed on Springer is because they saw Trevor Bauer as their guy. Clearly, that's what they thought. I think that Sandy Alderson very much thought that he was going to sign Trevor Bauer. We've been over Trevor Bauer a lot in this podcast. We're not going to go back into it now. But I think that Sandy Alderson thought they were signing Trevor Bauer. The Dodgers came in and not topped the Mets offer, but offered him kind of a more or less equivalent contract. He wanted to play for the Dodgers, so he went there. So Sandy didn't get his guy, and in the meantime, he also didn't sign Springer because he thought he was signing this other major free agent to a lot of money. And as a result, he missed on both. And I think that that's going to come back to bite them. I understand.
Trevor Bauer ruins everything.
He does ruin everything.
QED.
He ruined everything, you ruiner.
Life ruiner. And, like, I think, I understand where the Mets are coming from, like Maggie said, with Jackie Bradley, and how that's not really a fit, especially since there isn't a DH this year. With George Springer, you kind of have to say screw it and give him the money anyway, because, A, the no DH in the National League thing is only this year. It's probably the universal DH is likely coming in the next collective bargaining agreement, although we don't know for sure. But you can't just plan your long term based on this 1 year of not having the DH. You have to kind of, if you have a good player out there that fits your need, you kind of have to go for it. And if they don't extend Michael Conforto and he walks now, then you have a problem and you have to fill that need again. And if you already have George Springer on your team, if Michael Conforto walks, that's a hell of a lot less of a sting than if, you know, you don't have Springer around, you know?
Well, and also I don't get why they were willing to go to like $40 million for Bauer, but they weren't willing to go to what, 25 for Springer?
It makes no sense to me either, but I think that they really thought they were getting Bauer, and so they stopped negotiating with Springer.
Well, it really puts it really raises the stakes on the extensions, because
yes,
I think if Conforto and Lindor are here next year, then like this is a very good offseason. If they are not, then it's kind of meh, and next offseason becomes much more high stakes and much more complicated.
Yep.
So
well, they have to extend Lindor either way.
I hope so.
I don't think that, like, they can't. Like, you traded away your shortstops, like, both of them. So what are you going to do? I mean,
Jonathan Villar.
Yeah. Or just try Javi Baez next year. Why not? Or Trevor Story. I can't keep up with
it. If they did, then they'll just trade for him the following year.
That's true. So then just trade for Story. Like, they have options. But really, the answer is just extend Lindor.
Yeah. And that's sort of what I by like, it just becomes more complicated. Like, that becomes another major hole that they need to plug, and they don't have the pieces that they used this year to get Lindor in the first place. Like, it all looks a lot shinier if these guys are sticking around. And I feel like they probably are.
Well, but not it's to mention, still,
we don't really have our feet under us yet of, like, what the new Mets are really about.
No, and not to mention, their pitching's going to be a disaster again in a couple of years. Like, Stroman will be a free agent again. Jake has an opt-out in 2022. Yeah, Syndergaard. So it's really just Carrasco that you're sure is going to be around for another couple of years.
Which is a great get. I feel like Carrasco,
I love him.
His addition is super underrated. I have always liked him. I'm really glad he's here. And for 3 years. Like, that's awesome. I think it's one of the,
like, that's a steal, really.
Low-key best moves of the offseason. But, like, also that, again, it doesn't make an offseason. That's not a central piece.
Yeah. I think that the Lindor extension, I mean, like, obviously, because we're all Mets fans and we all have, like, you know, PTSD, like, every day that goes by, I get more and more nervous in spite of myself. But, like, I still think that the likelihood of a Lindor extension is high. I think that they made this trade knowing that they would extend. No, I think that they made this trade more or less knowing what his extension asking price was, and feeling like they could meet that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have traded both of their existing shortstops in said trade. Conforto, I feel a little less, confident about. I mean, I feel equally enthusiastic about the idea of extending Conforto as I do about extending Lindor. I think they should extend both. But I am less confident only because Scott Boras is a thing and he is Conforto's agent, and it's really tough. You've seen his clients, like, and I'm not knocking Scott Boras, like, he does a good job for his clients, but he has a client, and this year might very well be Jackie Bradley, that, like, waits till June to sign every year, because his demands are high, and he rarely, if ever, allows his clients to extend to team-friendly, like, under-market type contracts. So the Mets are going to have to pony up.
Conforto's probably more valuable than Jackie Bradley at this point.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, like, he instantly becomes, if he hits free agency next offseason, he instantly becomes the most valuable free agent outfielder. And Conforto and Boras know this. So I think that they, you know, and I don't think Conforto, I'm not saying that Conforto hates being a Met or anything like that. I think he loves being a Met. But he has not given any quotes beyond the cursory, like, I really like being a Met type of quotes that almost everyone gives. Like, Lindor said that same stuff about Cleveland. Like, he wanted to stay with Cleveland, but they just didn't give him what he was asking for. Conforto is not going to take a hometown discount to stay a Met. He's just not going to. And so the Mets are going to have to pony up if they want him to stay on the team. Right now, my feelings about a Conforto extension are, I don't know, about 50-50 about whether that happens. I really don't know. I think, and like I said earlier, I think that if they do extend Conforto, then I am able to swallow the pill of losing out on Springer a whole lot easier. In fact, I probably forget about it entirely. But if they don't, I'm going to be thinking about missing out on George Springer for quite some time.
I mean, the thing to remember about Conforto and the reason he is so valuable to the Mets and to the rest of the world is, like, and I had to look this up just to be sure, he is 27 years old. He will be 28 when the season starts, but it feels like he's been a Met forever. ever because he debuted so young and so early into his professional career. But like, they're just not that many 28-year-old star free agents anymore. Like, that's a hard thing to come about. And that's also what made the Lindor acquisition so exciting, because he's right in his prime. And that's what makes Conforto more valuable than Springer, because Springer's 31 or 32. I can't remember, but he's not 27 going on 28. And that
Springer's 31, you know, I think. Makes,
yeah. And that's what makes Conforto such, like, that contract that he's going into is a huge one for him, because he will certainly never have a bigger payday in his life. And it will give whatever lucky team it is, please Lord the Mets, like a solid 5 years of peak excellent corner outfield. And that's just, that's, I don't blame him for not signing an extension, but I would love for the Mets to be, to just be on him, just like be pursuing him, be open about how much they value him, because I think that's kind of all they can do right now.
Well, and also I think for the Mets, it's also a bigger blow because he kind of stepped up into the leadership role that had been missing since David Wright left. And I don't, like, I adore Pete. I love Pete, but he's just way too excitable. Like, he can be a leader on the field by his play, but, you need that kind of level-headed, you know, even-keeled, like, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low, and I feel like Conforto does that. And we saw him really step up last year and do that. And if he's gone, I really don't know. Maybe Lindor, but again, that would, you know, you would need to extend him. So, I don't, that leadership role would be significantly lacking. And everybody, you know, talked about, you know, how close the clubhouse is, how tight the clubhouse was. And I think that really did translate in 2019. So I think it gets overblown chemistry, but I think it does play a factor. And I don't know, I think that would be a significant blow for them, because they just, like, Jake, I don't think is that person either, just because he's his own Jake kind of guy.
For pitchers. Like, even the real, like, leadership-y ones are still only out there every 5 days.
Yeah,
like,
he can't relate.
There's something to be said for consistency.
Yeah, and, like, Jake tries in his own Jake way. But, like you said, it's hard for pitchers. They can't relate to what the everyday players are going through, like, if they're slumping or, you know, whatever. So I don't know. I don't know who would fill that role. Like, Nimmo could be traded or gone in a couple of years. So who?
And would, I don't think of Nimmo as having that vibe.
No, I don't either.
He's got more like the mascot vibe. Like, he's always gonna be out there like jazzing everybody up, big
he's
smile.
He's the cheerleader.
But, like,
yeah,
and that's huge. But like, Conforto is, and I don't ever want to like put anybody else in David Wright's shoes, because that is just, those are impossible shoes to fill. But like, Conforto is the closest thing. The guy who's out there playing every day, you know, feeling it with the team, happy when they're doing well, sad when they're not, answering the questions. I think he's also their union rep, like just kind of out there, you know, paying, like listening to his teammates and communicating with everybody. And that's huge, and that's a hard thing to find. You know, I think to have someone come up really young and start to pick that up, that's really special, and it's a reason that the Mets should be willing to value him somewhat more than other teams as well, because that's something that he has uniquely for them.
Well, yeah. So he's the union rep, like Maggie said. He's the union rep, and I think if you like, that's another huge thing. And I think that if they extend him, like you could slap a C on him, like he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has the right combination of, you know, I think he's the happy medium between Jake on one end of the leadership spectrum and sort of Pete Alonso and Nimmo on the other end of the spectrum. Pete Alonso and Nimmo are the cheerleader types, and they get very, like, they can pump you up on the field and, like, be like, yeah, get that base hit, and, like, slap the railing and, like, all that sort of stuff. They get really excited and are able to hype guys up. Jake is more the, like, quiet, like, lead by example, show your leadership through your performance. But he's very uncomfortable in front of cameras and in the spotlight, and you can tell, and that's not a knock on him, it's just his personality. But like, Jake is not the person that's going to be comfortable being the guy that the media comes to with all the questions all the time, and Conforto kind of has both of those sides in one person.
Jake, for me, he did it in more subtle ways. Like, you know, there was the whole controversy with Ramos, and I think Tim Healy brought it up that after every start, unprompted, Jake would praise Ramos. He'd be like, he called a really good game. Like, I thought he really helped me, like, you know, think through that at bat or whatever. So Jake does it in, like, more subtle ways, which I think you also need. Like, if he sees somebody like Ramos getting killed, like, he'll be like, no, he actually, you know, really called a good game. He helped me out today. So I think you need that combination of both, and not always the flashy, like, rah-rah in your face guys like Pete or Nimmo.
Yeah. And like, Jake is a professional. He is, yes, like, absolute rock solid pro. Great from what any of us can see, like, great teammate. Like, that's all, you know, I get the vibe that, like, if you were to go to the stadium every day and, like, put in your work with Jake, he would be just the absolute best person to work with.
Oh, Stroman already said that. I don't know if you saw the article.
I was just going to mention that, like, yeah, the Stroman, yeah, article.
Yeah.
And that's huge. But again, it's a different thing from the, like, public face of the team leadership kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Extend Conforto and Lindor, Mets. Please do it. Begging
and
you
don't
do
let
it.
Jake opt out.
And don't let Jake opt out.
Why would you say that? Don't even put that out there.
I can't think about that.
Chicano Squad tells the story of Houston's first ever all-Latino homicide squad, formed in the 1970s to face a growing number of unsolved murders in their own community.
None of us knew what we were up against.
A story of five young officers torn between the neighborhoods that raised them.
I had a Mexican flag on my desk, and they told me, hey, the lieutenant doesn't want that Mexican flag over there.
And the badges they wore.
Some of my friends stopped talking to me.
Against impossible odds, they faced murders.
As soon as she walks outside, they shot her 14 times.
Cartels.
The Colombians were, man, they would execute you, kill you.
Kidnappings.
One morning they woke up and the baby was gone.
And more.
They just flew this guy in from Colombia and he's tracking you down. He wants to kill you.
But nobody wants to hear a story about a homicide squad that failed, right? My name is Cristela Alonso, and this is the story of the Chicano Squad. Listen to Chicano Squad now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
The offseason's not over yet. I mean, we're getting into spring training now, but there's still free agents available that the Mets could sign. And I do think they have at least one more move, if not a couple, I hope, up their sleeves. They just, like, add one more back-end starter, add another reliever, and then you can kind of wrap this offseason up and extend and extend Conforto and Lindor. And then you can kind of wrap the offseason up, and then it's a big success if they do all that, I think. It's I like I said, the only thing that's keeping it from being like an A+ offseason for me is not signing Springer, but if they do all the other things, I think it's like a solid B+ at least offseason.
Yeah, like, I can give them credit for, you know, preventing, like, the Danny Munoz of the world and Daryl Sicilianis of the world, like, getting significant at-bats. Like, they've definitely safeguarded against that. So, and I think that's something that's been lacking for a really long time. So, just having, like, your options being Jonathan Villar and Jose Martinez instead of Danny Muno, like, you have actually, like, major league quality depth now. So, I think that's significant for them, for this team, because, like, I can't remember ever, like, where you're like, oh God, who are they signing? Who just got DFA'd or who's like, well, kind of hitting in AAA?
Ugh. Like, I mean, all these guys you bring in, they're like, wow, I've got a good starter here. And who's behind him? Well, let's hope we don't have to find out. Like, they're always just these, like, absolute. I'm sorry. Some of them are, I'm sure they're lovely people, but, yeah, like, they have no place on a major league roster, let alone, like, one torn hamstring away from starting for 6 weeks. Like, that's. The Mets' depth situation has always been so, so brutal. And so that is one of the reasons I'm willing to, like, be a little more positive on this offseason than a lot of people, which is, like, they're not just building depth. They're building, like, quality depth, the kind of depth that contending teams will have. And that's a nice change of pace from, sorry, Danny Munoz. Someone coming to mind right now. Sorry, buddy.
I don't mean to pick on him, but
I hope his mom doesn't listen to this podcast. That's always my first thought.
Not having to give like 10 or 15 starts to Walker Lockett is like a good thing, you guys. Like, and I mean, in the end, listen, like, obviously these guys are depth for a reason. Like, it's not anything to write home about, but I would much rather, and it might be that in the end, if Jordan Yamamoto has to make a significant number of starts, it might not be that his numbers end up any better than like a Walker Lockett, but at least he has upside. At least you can see that upside, as opposed to their floors might be just about the same, but the ceiling is so much higher on these guys that they've been getting, and that's what you're betting on. You're betting on the upside. Jordan Yamamoto has way better stuff than Walker Lockett ever had.
I'm kind of excited for Jordan Yamamoto, I'm not gonna lie.
He's a great pickup, and he knew the LFGM hashtag immediately.
Yes!
I'm on
he
board.
Photoshopped himself in a Mets uniform already.
Love
yeah,
to
there's
see
so
it.
Many guys, like, I'm super psyched about Trevor May also. I realize he's not depth. He's like a quality, you know, major league reliever,
no,
like,
mean,
not a depth guy, but,
guy
like,
now.
He's another one who's really, like, seems to get into the idea of being a Met right away, and that just feels awesome.
That's
like,
always instantly endearing.
Yeah. And McCann, like, never tweeted before, but now this offseason, like, he was tweeting at Stroman, and, like, Syndergaard retweeted him. So it's kind of nice just to see him, like, I guess trying to, like, you know, get in with his new teammates and just to have a more visible presence for the fans. And so I was like, oh, okay, I can get behind James McCann. Like, his, I think we've mentioned it before, like, his press conference after they signed him, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm ready to run through a brick wall for him now.
Yeah.
So it's nice that, you know, we're not seen as like a place to avoid anymore. Like, we're kind of a destination spot, for lack of a better term. Yeah, people, they seem excited, and you know, fans can see that and feel it and feed off of it. And especially Stroman, like, Stroman's like tweeting at all his teammates.
He's excited to have his teammate Kevin Pillar back.
Yes.
Tweet Stroman while we're having the conversation. Keep Stroman around for the next 5 years,
that'd be
please.
Great too. That'd
he needs
be great.
To retire, Matt.
Ugh, I love Stroman. Holy shit, I love him so much.
I mean, I was sad, Matt.
The vibes off the charts with that guy.
Yes. Just
manifesting on another level from everybody else. Just truly vibing.
I'm telling you, man. Like, being at his first start at Citi Field, it was electric. And you could, he plays off the crowd. Like, you know, Jake's always so stoic on the mound, and but just seeing Stroman was just like a completely different experience that I wasn't used to as a fan. And it was just awesome. Like, he was pumping up the crowd and like waving to the crowd, and like I wanted that back, and I was sad that we didn't get to see it last year, and I thought that was it. But now that we have him back, I hope he sticks around for a little while longer.
That'd be nice. The projection systems certainly like the Mets. Pagoda likes the Mets a lot. I don't know if people have seen the Pagoda projections are out from Baseball Prospectus. And they have the Mets as like a 96 win team and like winning the NL East by a lot. Which
you can kind of see.
Yeah.
it's not an out there idea. I don't know if it's my modal prediction. I don't know, for my internal system, like, I don't know if that's the one that, like, I land on 700 out of 1,000 times or whatever. But, like, it doesn't feel impossible or even improbable.
Yep, exactly.
I don't know if it's, yeah, like, it's definitely feasible, but they seem to hate the Braves, which I don't know if I buy.
I don't get that either. I don't understand why. Like, I'm not, and I think that so when the Pecota projection came out, a lot of people were talking about how much it underrates the Braves, which is an accurate, you know, observation. But I think other people I think they swung the pendulum too far in the other direction, and they were like, the Braves are way better than the Mets. I don't understand this. I don't think that's true. I think I would honestly put them at about equal footing at this point. Like, they're both damn good ball clubs, I think.
Well, the Braves didn't really add, did they? Now, they were already a great team. Like, they didn't have...
They were way better than the Mets in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm trying to think of, like, I don't think there's been any real turnover in that roster, and maybe I'm forgetting something.
Marcelo Zuna.
They brought back guys. So I guess the argument you could make is that they are who they were before, but a year older. And then, you know, with the Mets adding wins, those wins are coming out disproportionately of NL East teams. And so I could see them, you know, regressing a bit from last year due to those two factors, but it does still seem like a big stretch.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Braves pitching staff kind of reminds me of the Mets pitching staff in 2015. Like, they're all really young and really good.
And they were very injured last year, keep in mind.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is they were injured. So I think as long as they stay healthy and...
Although that's always a big if.
So, I don't know.
The best predictor of an injury is having an injury last year. So I think that's why coming back from injuries may not be like a win per se for the Braves.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because Pecota, like, straight up hates the Braves, but, like, has them, like, below Philly and Washington, which I don't understand at all. But then Fangraphs projections came out. Fangraphs has a different, like, way of doing it than Pecota. Pecota publishes, like, these bell curves almost, so you can almost see, like, what's each team's, like, median outcome versus, like, their 95th percentile outcome, and you can see the curves, and you can see where the curves are along the x-axis, right? Whereas Fangraphs just publishes, like, likelihood percentages of, like, making the playoffs. So Fangraphs also likes the Mets. Fangraphs has... So Pecota has the Mets at, like, 96 wins as their, like, median projection, and Fangraphs has the Mets at, like, 85% likelihood playoffs, which I think is like the third highest percentage in the National League behind the Dodgers and the Padres. The Dodgers and the Padres are both in the 90s percentile likelihood to make the playoffs. They had the Braves the second highest, but they only had them, I think it was like 60% or something like that. I can't remember, but much lower than
did
the
Mets. I can't remember. Are they expanding the playoffs or no?
No.
Or was that not decided yet?
No, they're not expanding the playoffs. Well, okay. At least as far as, like, the current agreement, which I think, like, it's not set in stone because there's no, like, actual, like, no one signed a piece of paper. But, like, the latest agreement between the union, and we could get into that next because that was kind of the next thing on my notes here. So the baseball news that's prevalent right now is, you know, continued, like, labor negotiations surrounding both COVID and the upcoming, you know, expiration of the current collective bargaining agreement, but, like, how to deal with this season before the CBA is up at the end of it. So they've reached an agreement on health protocols and rules for the 2021 season, which includes keeping the seventh inning doubleheaders and a runner on second in extras. So those two rules are from last season are in place again this season. I hate the runner on second and extra innings. I could go on a whole podcast long rant about how much I hate
it. It's the worst of their little,
sucks.
Like,
I hate
bullshit
it.
Rules. Like, I...
It makes no sense.
The seventh inning doubleheaders, especially during pandemic baseball, I can deal with that. Because if you have
to... And those are long days.
You have to... especially during, like, COVID, when you anticipate that there may have to be games rescheduled and a lot of doubleheaders, I understand having seven inning doubleheaders. I don't love it because it still feels less like baseball, but I understand it during the pandemic. I hope they get rid of it after the pandemic's over. But this runner on second extras is like, I understand they're trying to speed the games up. I understand this is COVID, but that deviates too far from what is baseball to me. It's just like, it's just unholy.
Yes.
I hate it.
Well, and it so clearly throws off the pitchers and like whoever, you know, whatever the visiting team is, almost always we'll get a couple of runs, and it just sort of deflates going into it. Just, it feels very like it throws the energy off a lot, like the whole, not just the pitcher's energy, but like everything. And it just plays with the momentum in really weird ways. And it just, it's the 10th inning. Like, give them I could almost understand it if it's like the 12th inning or the 13th, if you must, but like, I don't know. And then they're talking about, like, oh, what about those 16-inning games? And I looked it up. Something like 7 in 1,000 games go to the 16th inning. So, like, I'm sorry. We can just suck it up for 7 out of 1,000 games.
Also,
to go,
like,
to 16th inning.
I'm sorry. I like baseball. So watching baseball for 16 innings is not a problem for me. That's not something that's a problem that needs fixing. That's like, ooh, look, free baseball. How fun. Like,
well, I can buy if it was happening, like, you know, a couple times a week. That's a lot of taxing and
yes.
a bullpen, you know, all that stuff. But it's not.
Injuries, yes.
It's not like a frequent enough occurrence that you need to make such a drastic change to the game to account for it.
For me, like, you know, I'm very anti-DH, we know this, but, like, because I like quirky baseball, like, that's just one of baseball's weird quirks. Like, there's no clock, and now this is basically putting a clock on the game. Like, you're saying, okay, time to go, wrap it up, and that's not baseball to me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, Linda. I agree. Anything, to me, my favorite thing about baseball is that it's weird as hell. And anything that sanitizes it and makes it less weird, I hate. I hate this seventh inning. I mean, I hate the runner on second and extras because that makes it less weird. I hate the NLDH, if only because it forces the leagues to have the same rules, and mm-hmm. I like that they have different rules, because that's weird as hell. No other sport has anything like that. It's, quite frankly, kind of dumb, but, like, I like it. Like, I like that it's dumb.
It's our dumb.
It's our dumb, and, like, every ballpark has different dimensions. That's weird as hell. No other sport has that. Like, a field that's not a standard size. What the hell is that? But if they stopped doing that, it would be sad. If every stadium looked the same, it would suck. I would hate that.
Yeah, like, cookie cutter stadiums would just be boring. That's not, like, why bother visiting other stadiums at that point?
And I know, well, that
those,
this is,
and those
relatively...
7 in 1,000 games,
yeah,
oh, sorry, those are crazy.
Yeah, it's
go
fun.
Out for dinner and you come back, you're like, holy shit, that game is still on. Like,
that game's still on. It's so fun.
And, like, it will never happen again if there's a runner on second. It will never get that far.
No, I mean, it's sad.
And, like, the NLDH, it takes away weird stuff like Bartolo Colon's home run. It takes away, like, all sorts of, like,
Jerry Blevins getting a hit.
Sean Meese's pinch hit triple.
Yeah, like, that. All that stuff is so fun. And I also love, like, position players pitching. Like, that shit is fun to me. And so, like, and that's part of what comes with long extra inning games, is that sometimes you get a position player pitching, and I find that fun as hell. Like, all this stuff that makes baseball more fun, they've sanitized it. And I know it's, like, a minor gripe in the end, but I am still mad about taking away the intentional walk and making it the abracadabra walk. I know that makes me sound like back in my day, very Gary, Keith, and Ron about it, but, like, every once in a while, they would screw up the intentional walk and a pitch would get away and, like, weird stuff would happen. That's never going
to
happen again.
Who was it who refused to take it? Was it Miguel Cabrera?
Miguel Cabrera, like, swung at, like, yes. a pitch out and got a hit. Like, that stuff is fun. Amazing. And now it's not a thing anymore. Now they just put the finger down and he goes, I get it. But, like, was it really worth, like, taking away that
20 seconds.
Small chance that there could be something fun for saving 5 seconds? Like, is it really worth it? I don't know. Not to me, but whatever. I mean, Rob Manfred clearly feels differently. But I just think all these rule changes are made by people who don't like baseball. Like, it's like...
That does seem to be the unifying theme is, like, how can we have less baseball?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which exactly I'm like, I like more baseball, is. Personally. I don't know about you. So yeah, that's, but yeah, also part of this agreement, so the seven inning doubleheaders are being kept. The runner on second and extras, which everyone hates, is being kept. There's no DH in the NL right now. That might change with the new collective bargaining agreement, but it seems like we're going into 2021 without a DH in the National League. There is also no expanded playoffs, which I do like because I hated the expanded playoffs as well. But like, there was...
I feel like there's a happy medium on expanded playoffs, and that wasn't it. That was like...
16
that was like mega
teams is
expanded.
Too many.
That was... That's more than half.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
too many.
You can't
too
tell
many.
Me that more than half of teams should be in any sort of final, you know, celebration of the greatest talent. Like, that's just not how math works.
It's too many. And so, initially, my understanding is... They proposed, so they wanted 16-team playoffs again. That was not a thing. Then MLB wanted 14 teams, and the union turned that down, and so there's no expanded playoffs at all. So the playoffs are going to be the way they were before COVID, which I'm fine with. I like the current playoff system. The only thing that I liked about the expanded playoffs that I think should be kept is a 3-game series wildcard round. I like that better than 1-game playoffs, for the wildcard, because I don't think baseball should be decided. I don't think a playoff series should be decided by 1 game. I understand that it incentivizes winning the division, and I think that the winning the division should be incentivized, but I think that the wild card should be a 3-game series. That's my opinion, but you know, it's not going to be this year.
And also you get people like, it just waters everything down. Like, teams barely trying can make the playoffs. Like, so then why bother going for it? Because
and as we've
you
seen,
can just,
they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
They choose not to.
Yeah. So there's going to be no reason to even, like, try, because it's like, oh, I can, you know, fall backwards into the playoffs and call it a successful season, which the Marlins did with Mattingly. And
on the flip side, they can say, well, like, yeah, we could try really hard to make it to the playoffs, but then once we do, you know, there's so many like ways that you cannot make it all the way to the series. It becomes too much of a crapshoot once you're there. And like, I don't totally agree with that. I think like the playoffs are the playoffs, and you just sort of have to like get a little lucky and hope for the best. But like, it's just anti competitive in so many ways.
Yeah
that's exactly what it is. You're taking away what sport is, basically, like the nature of sport, and like it's just an affront to like everything that I am as a fan. Like, yeah, okay, I would like to see the Mets in the playoffs, and yeah, I would give them a greater chance, but let's be real, if the Mets made the playoffs last year, it would have been an embarrassment. So just no. And, like, why get my frustration up for something that, you know, isn't necessary?
Yep. The other thing, and I'm just going to read this quote from the ESPN article rather than, like, try to summarize. But on the, like, health protocol side, the ESPN article about the agreement says, quote, "The agreement includes more sophisticated contact tracing for COVID-19 that includes the use of technology and more league rules on behavior to comply with coronavirus protocols." Now, that is sufficiently vague such that, like, am I convinced MLB actually cares about player safety? Not really. But they claim that there are more robust you know, COVID-19 rules in place for this season than there were last year.
But they're letting fans in?
Yeah. You know.
I don't understand.
The vaccine is not going to be mandatory for players, almost because like they kind of like legally can't do that. But like, I do think, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see, like, A, if players are prioritized and the ethical issues surrounding that, and B, if they are, like, what, how, like, how much vaccine uptake there's going to be. I mean, I think that if they leave it up to the players to, like, go seek out appointments, like, at the CVS or whatever, I think your uptake's going to be pretty damn low. But I think if you, like, bring it into the clubhouse and, like, let them get the vaccine like through the team and they don't have to do any work, then I think enough of like plenty of them will get it. I think the only like holdouts will be like the true like anti-vax assholes.
I can't wait till we find out for sure who all those guys are. And I can't wait. I mean, I hope I never do. I don't want to know. They're all terrible.
Yeah, very but much dreading understand. Finding out that like my favorite baseball player is an anti-vaxxer. Can't wait for that.
I mean, let's be real. Ugh. Brandon Nimmo is definitely not getting vaccinated.
Probably not.
Sorry.
Maybe you could just, Brandon. Like, lie and say it's a flu shot or something. I don't know.
It's a happiness shot, Brandon. It makes you get to first base more. 8 times faster on an intentional walk.
Yep.
But, like, I don't understand how baseball can basically say, I mean, I'm not advocating for baseball players to get the vaccine before teachers, but all of last year, like, baseball kept saying baseball players are essential workers, and now they're saying, oh, no, wait, no, they're not, never mind. Like, the messaging is all off, and they can't have it both ways. Like, they shouldn't have been playing last year, and then maybe they shouldn't be playing this year without a vaccine, but that's not an option, I guess.
Right. And like, I don't know, like, do I feel icky about professional athletes? Just kind of, this is kind of the same conversation we had with testing when testing supplies were in short supply and they were getting tested every couple of days. Do I feel icky about them being prioritized for something that's in short supply and people who like really, really need it are not getting it? Yeah, I really do. I feel icky about that. But the season is going to go on whether they are vaccinated or not, and if they aren't vaccinated, then they risk bringing the virus home to their very at-risk family members and the very potentially very at-risk ballpark staff. And so, like, you know, then in that sense, would I rather them be vaccinated? Yeah, probably. Like, there's a no-win scenario here, you know? Like, either they're
using
up...
There's still the question of whether the vaccine will prevent transmission,
which we don't know.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I feel like ultimately I would have been better with the testing situation if they'd actually done something with the testing results, if they had used testing to like protect people, but they didn't. It turned out, you know, Justin Turner prancing about, is just the perfect final image to that season, because ultimately testing didn't seem to change anybody's behavior. It didn't seem to result in anyone, you know, quarantining who was supposed to be quarantining. Like, everything was done so like freaking Marlins voting on whether to play a game. Like,
it was Mattingly won manager of the year. Scared.
Yeah. No. And that's so I can't exactly think of how the parallel would work with the vaccine, but regardless, MLB has done nothing to engender my confidence in their willingness to appropriately use public health resources.
Yep. But there's going to be, unless obviously things start happening, which they might, but they are planning on having a 162 game season. They are going to attempt that will start on April 1st, which is pretty soon.
With fans in the stands.
Yep, in some places, with fans in the stands at reduced capacity. I mean, like, I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for other people. I am not going anywhere near a baseball game, at the very least, until I'm vaccinated, which is not happening for a while because I am very low priority, as I should be. And even once I'm vaccinated, like, the outdoor events at reduced capacity makes a little bit more sense, but I can't believe they're doing indoor sporting events, which they are doing, which is nuts to me. That's insane. That's insane.
Yep. February 23rd, I think the Nets are having fans in the stands.
That's
insane. New York are. The Nets, the Knicks.
Oh my God, Andrew Yang had this tweet where he was saying that, like, the city owes the fans the ability to get safely to these games. And it's like, yeah, buddy, there are 18 different subway lines that will take them to the games where they can sit in a petri dish for 3 hours with no ventilation.
Like, it's unconscionable.
And they have to take their masks off to eat. Like, they're not going to keep their masks on the whole time.
Yeah, man, I stopped by Dinosaur Barbecue to pick up food on Sunday because it was David's birthday, and there were all these people with, like, kids eating inside. And I was like, oh, God, get me out of here. It was jeez, people, come on.
The idea of being in any sort of crowd inside is just like, no, hell no.
Pete at the Super Bowl. Pete, no.
Bad. Not good. Not good, Bob.
No, not.
I mean, I get that, like, we are like tilting against windmills here. I don't know. It's just like, I know that nothing, that our opinions are so in the, I don't know if it's minority or what anymore. It feels like everybody is going out and, like, shoving their faces on other people's faces. But man, I don't like to see it.
Like, we're all tired. I get it. Like, we all have the pandemic fatigue, but that doesn't mean it just automatically goes away because you're over it.
We're so close.
Yeah, but there's light now.
Just do the thing.
Please, I'm begging you.
Sitting at home is the thing.
Yeah.
Watching the game on TV is the thing.
Yep. I look forward to doing that and not going outside. So, before we get to walk-off wins, I just kind of have, like, two, like, maintenance items, so to speak, for you guys. The first is that I just wanted to give a couple shout-outs to, and I should really do this more often, but I don't. I mean, I do try to shout out, pieces of writing when they are relevant to the topic that we're talking about, but today I just want to give a couple shout-outs to pieces of writing that I've read over the past day or so that I think are just fantastic pieces of baseball writing that everyone should read. The first is The Way Out by RJ McDaniel on Fangraphs. They wrote about an intensely personal story about their own experience struggling with mental health issues and suicidal thoughts and attempts. And in light of, you know, the piece that came out about Drew Robinson and his attempt to take his own life and about, you know, those who have mental health issues who suffer in silence and mental health in baseball and how we can all be better about addressing these things. So you should absolutely read that piece. It's phenomenal. Please read it. And we have a piece that's related to issues that we've brought up on the podcast before and we'll surely be discussing more with Andrea Williams, who the interview, which is rescheduled for March 2nd. So we will have Andrea Williams for you guys. Rest assured, it's been rescheduled, but I'm sure we'll talk about this more with her. But Shakia Taylor on Baseball Prospectus wrote a piece called MLB Cannot Elevate the Negro Leagues by Subsuming Them. So that is also a really good piece. You should absolutely read that about how, you know, MLB recognizing the Negro Leagues as, quote, you know, elevating their status is not necessarily the answer here, and how we shouldn't sanitize history by saying, okay, we did it, it's better now, while not recognizing the fact that they were considered less than for, you know, years and years and decades. So you should absolutely read that piece as well. So those are two pieces that you guys should be reading. Obviously, there's plenty of other fantastic pieces out there, but those are two in particular I read this week that I really enjoyed. Meanwhile, next week, we are having our fundraiser raffle. We will circulate a Zoom link on our social media. It's kind of going to be like a virtual meetup like it was last time for our mini Dollars for Dingers that we did. We'll have our prizes. I'll draw from my floral hat again. I'll draw names from the, you know, almost 50 different donors that we've had, which is incredible, you guys. Thank you so much, by the way. I should give an updated
number. You're so spoiled.
Yeah. Know, right? We have the best listeners in the entire
world.
These
are amazing.
I need to give an updated number that I should have written down in the show notes and didn't, much to my dismay. But last time we recorded, Kellyanne Healy challenged the listeners to get us to $3,000 by the end of that week. We met that goal. By the end of the last time we recorded 2 weeks ago, we did reach $3,000, and we are now at $3,225.14 for domestic violence charities. So thank you guys so much. The impact is incredible, beyond what I ever could have imagined when we just sort of thought this up because we were, you know, dismayed by Hall of Fame voting, and we just wanted to do something. So thank you guys so much for stepping up huge. Next week we'll get to celebrate, have our big raffle, have you guys on Zoom with us, get to chat about baseball, whatever else you guys want to chat about. So we're very excited for that. We will have a Zoom link for you soon. In the meantime, the fundraiser's not over yet. It doesn't end until we draw our first name from the raffle. So you can still be eligible if you make a donation in any amount to the National Domestic Violence Hotline or the Women's Shelter or Domestic Violence Charity of your choice. DM us your receipt at apotoftheirown, or you can email us the receipt aa.apotoftheirown@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who's already donated. Very excited for next week's fundraiser raffle. We can't wait. So, yep, check that out. Keep an eye on our social media for that Zoom link. But
can we get to 5,000?
Can we? That would be incredible. Linda, you just set the bar. Can we get to 5,000 by next week? Come on, guys. Let's do it. But in the meantime...
Maddie just woke up at that. You got it's so exciting. The cat woke up.
The cat was like $5,000.
Did she then give you kind of a slow blink and fall back asleep?
No, she's checking out the computer. So if I get cut off, I don't know why.
Oh man. We will end the show this week with walk-off wins, like we always do, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So we are avowed city folk in this family, to the point where I actually was never able to successfully pass a New York State driving test. But when we were in South Dakota for 3 months, I figured it would never get easier, you know, with like my in-law's nice car and those extremely wide lanes that they have out there. And so I got my license and we took a step this week that I never thought we would take, truly never even imagined. And we bought a car.
Yay!
It's a used Prius. It's 2012, very fancy, but it's so pretty. It is very dark blue, and I the guy dropped it off, and I was looking at it, I was like, y'all realize it will never be cleaner than it is at this exact moment in time. And yep. it's really nice. We haven't quite figured out exactly how to make it as convenient as it ought to be. You know, we're still sort of trying to get like the rhythm of having a car, but it's really nice, and it will make it a lot easier to take the kids to games, because we won't have to spend, you know, an hour and 20 minutes coming back on public transportation at the end, and we'll get to like visit my mom, and like I can take my dad to doctor's appointments, and we can like drive around New Jersey and look at train yards. You know, and that feels really, it feels really special and really freeing to kind of have all these new options that we never had before. So yeah, so dyed in the wool city folk here, enjoying having a car. So,
well, and as a Toyota owner, I feel like You picked a good one. I'll just say that.
My mom has a 2012 Prius that is currently on she's like into her 200,000th mile and it's still like solid as a rock. So my understanding is someone was saying if you have a pre-2000 Camry, you have to be super careful because the cars will last forever. And so they will constantly get stolen for parts.
Oh, wow.
Because they don't make those parts anymore. The Toyotas, you can't kill them. They will outlive you. So.
Oh, I cried when I gave up my 05 Corolla. Oh, that was a sad day. But yeah, you can't kill them. Like you can try, but they're just not going to go down.
I love it. I'll show a picture at some point. It's very shiny. I should show a picture before it is no longer shiny. Because that will definitely
in winter,
happen.
Cars become not yes. shiny very quickly because yeah. of the salt.
Oh. We are so part of the deal though was that we were only going to get a car if we could budget it for a parking lot because otherwise we would just be kind of trading one stressor for another. And we did not want to spend the rest of our lives driving around looking for parking. So at least our baby is relatively well protected in the underbelly of Inwood. I don't even know where they park all these cars. It's like Mary Poppins' bag full of cars.
Yeah, you don't want to know. You don't.
No,
it's fine. I don't need to know. All I know is that it's someplace that I don't have to worry about it. And
now, have you
it
named
won't get nasty. We've been thinking about it. Okay. We're trying to. We know it's a girl. That just was obvious. So our parking lot is on Payson Avenue. And so I kind of thought Joan would be nice.
Yeah, name it Joan. That feels right.
I know. It just popped into mind. So, everybody can just, text my husband. I guess he's the holdout on that. He was not opposed to it by any means, but just, he's like, oh, okay, we'll think about it. I'm like, are you done thinking yet?
No, that's kismet. That's, fate. Perfect. I think you have to.
All right. I'll let him know.
Yes.
Pass he will that not along. Fight me on this.
Yep. You have two extra votes now.
Yes. And you have to throw change into the back seat for a good luck.
Yes, I keep forgetting. That's probably why we got stuck in traffic earlier today.
My car is also a 2012. It's not a Toyota, but my car is a 2012 Chevy Cruze. It's also dark blue. And her name is Penelope because Penelope Cruz, obviously.
Oh. See, mine is a 2018 RAV4 that I leased, and it's purple because I love purple. So, then purple is the color of royalty, so I named it Megan.
Oh, excellent. I
like that. Yep. Good stuff. So, yeah, I have Megan, my RAV4.
Yep, I am also an avowed city person. I mean, we live in D.C., but we made sure that we got an apartment that came with a dedicated parking spot so we could park the car because I like having my car. Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Okay, this is going to be kind of, I don't know. But so Saturday I woke up to get ready for work and my eye was completely swollen shut and I look in the mirror. It's like, huh, don't think that's supposed to be like that. So I tried the telehealth for the first time. And I have to say, it's pretty amazing. You just upload pictures. I got to fill out, the paperwork and everything. And then you upload pictures of your ailment. And then a doctor calls you. And, they called me within not even 5 minutes. And, it's like a regular doctor's visit in the privacy of your own home. And, my eye was swollen shut, so I couldn't drive. I'm not saying, if something good could come out of the pandemic and it seems like this is more of an option now, I think that could be a good thing. Just having my telehealth visit is my walk-off win because it was either a sty or pink eye. They don't know, but that's beside the point. But, you know, it's just, and then they also had, and it was all covered by my insurance. They had, they said if you wanted to see a therapist, if you needed, you know, they had resources for mental health and, you know, they had everything you could possibly need. So it just seemed like a really good resource that, you know, people should take advantage of if they have the option. Yeah. And then they called in my prescription right away. Like it just, it couldn't have been easier. So, you know, if I ever need it again, God willing, I don't, but it would definitely be something I would use again. So yeah, telehealth. That's my walk-off win.
I see my psychiatrist via telehealth, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it seems like it would be, you know, something that would be useful to people.
It's huge. It's, I think, I mean, I've been talking to people about it in the context of, because I'm a geneticist and a science policy person, so I've been talking to people about it in the context of genetics, and the telehealth revolution has been huge for the rare disease community because genetic specialists are hard to come by, and like genetic counseling is a profession that is like sorely understaffed, and we need more genetic counselors. So hey, you know, high school kids out there, if you're like interested in biology and genetics and you're like looking for a career in that, you should be a genetic counselor because they're desperately needed in the workforce. But anyway, so yeah, like telehealth has been huge because in order to see a specialist for your super rare condition that you might have, being able to access it through telehealth because you don't have a genetic counselor that specializes in your disease within 50 miles of you, is, you know, huge. So yeah, I've been talking to people a lot about that in the past couple months.
Yeah, I can see it being a game changer, and you know, it gets people help more quickly, I think, too. Like you don't have to wait in a waiting room. Like, you know, they gave me an estimated wait time of less than 10 minutes. So clearly they weren't busy because it was 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. But, you know, it's, if you really need help quickly, you know, it's a better option than sitting in like an urgent care waiting room.
Yeah, definitely.
Just about anything is better.
A better option.
Urgent care waiting room.
Yeah. I think we've all been there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, telehealth is awesome. So my walk-off win this week is a pretty simple one. It's just that I had a long weekend over the weekend and I desperately needed it because, yeah, Monday yesterday was President's Day. And so I had off because I'm a federal employee. And so we had all the federally recognized holidays off. It's just like last week was just really stressful at work. Not even like anything particularly bad or anything like that. It was just a very busy week and I just had a lot going on and I was working late every day last week and it was just a lot. And so I desperately needed just the 3-day weekend to relax and do nothing. It was actually productive from a like household perspective because I like did 4 loads of laundry and like built a headboard and like cooked meals for the week that we can have leftovers, as opposed to like the week before where we ordered takeout and I got left and we had leftovers like 3 nights because I just like had no time to cook. So I was actually like, you know, cooking meals, I put together a headboard, I did 4 loads of laundry. It was just like things that I needed to do that I didn't have time to do, that I was able to get done, and I was able to like read my book and relax. And then yesterday I went to the grocery store and got discount Valentine's Day chocolate, and that made me happy. So it was just like a nice long weekend, and that's my walk-off win.
We all need that. We gotta tell, like, I think we've said this on the pod before, like we need to take the victories where we can get them.
Yep.
Yeah,
for sure. Like it's big or small, we just, yeah, take pleasure in the little things. That's what I've learned.
Yep. So yeah.
And enjoy the 3-day weekends before there are children involved, and it's not a 3-day weekend. It's like a 50-day weekend, and oh my God, how is it still the weekend? Kids are great, but the 3-day weekends lose their touch.
Yeah, that makes sense. For now, I like them, though.
Yes.
But, yeah, while you're waiting for your next 3-day weekend, which I don't think is going to come for quite a while now. March kind of sucks for that.
Memorial Day?
Memorial Day. Christ.
Ugh. Is it that long?
Yeah, I think so. That is the next, like, federal holiday, which, ugh. But while you're waiting for that, you can go to AmazonAvenue.com. We are ramping up our content because spring training is going to start soon. We're going to have all of our, like, season preview type stuff. We're going to have King of Spring Training. I will likely do that feature again because I'm in charge of that. We're going to start having game recaps and all of that stuff, game threads for even the spring training games. So yeah, go to AmazonAvenue.com. All stuff Mets. It's all you need to go to. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Follow the show and follow all of us on Twitter. You can rate and review the show, subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts from, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio, our entire suite of shows. Rate and review them. It really helps people find the show. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Raffle next week. Stay tuned.